You just watched it?
Yes, I have just watched it.
So you should remember.
Some of it, yeah. I remember Buzz.
I was definitely buzzed watching it.
I know that it was in black and white.
Fucking Buzz, the rapist.
Who's Buzz?
Buzz the rapist.
Buzz.
Which one was Buzz?
He was one of the cousins.
Oh, I didn't get
okay.
It. Buzz, I didn't really, Buzz I didn't from really, Home Alone. I didn't really get their names. No,
that's not his name in the movie. It's Buzz from Home Alone.
Okay. Didn't recognize him at all.
The brother?
That gives Macaulay Culkin so much shit at the beginning of the movie.
I love how he uses references.
He's just like Buzz. I'm like, who the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. That's how I do things.
Like, if you said Tim Curry's character in Home Alone 2, I would have been like, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, I don't know his name.
Even if you said concierge, I wouldn't have known. Probably.
Oh, well, that's pretty bad.
Well, clearly I did because I did just mention it.
I'm not going to lie. I don't remember any of the characters' names from this.
I wrote them down.
Woody. So.
Oh, yeah, Woody.
They don't use their names very often in the movie.
Except for Woody. But yeah, and it's like, okay, Mom, Dad, Will Arnett, and...
There's no Will Arnett.
Will Forte, sorry.
Bob Odenkirk.
Honestly, well, actually, Will Arnett and Bob Odenkirk maybe actually have played brothers in something.
They did say Stacey Keach's character's name a lot.
Which is what?
I can't remember now.
Oh, perfect.
Because it's Stacey
Ed
Keach.
P. Burns?
I don't know, something like that. Piece of shit.
I don't know
what you're talking about.
Yes, Ed Pegram.
Oh, the guy with the compressor?
Yes. The guy with the compressor.
This is our cold open of the week.
Oh, I mean, we're already recording.
Yeah, I know. I think this is all good.
All right, well, one of you gets to take us in.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, it's whoever's running the show who starts the show.
Hi, I'm Dave, and I'm here with Amanda and Nick, and we just watched a movie.
Hi. We watched Nebraska.
Like the state?
Well, I mean, that's what the title is based
Thankfully,
on.
It was not as boring as I would have imagined based on the title.
No, I mean, I don't want you to watch a boring movie.
Nor is it as clean as the Nebraska airport is.
Oh, I'm
the
sure.
cleanest airport in the world.
Oh.
That's an interesting fact.
It's also the emptiest airport I've ever been in my life.
Nice.
Much like the rest of the state.
Yeah, it's pretty empty. I do want to, before we get into the movie itself, I do want to say that we have...
I like how we start this now, even though we've not been doing...
Right. Well,
whatever.
We have a Films Like the First Time First.
What?
Films Like the First Time First.
Which is one of our show hosts... lost their movie virginity of a movie that was on the list, but we aren't going to have an episode about it because it happened organically.
Can you explain what the hell you just said?
I feel like it was me.
Yes. Well, so
I watched something that was on the list.
There was a John Hughes classic on the list that Amanda had not seen, and she saw it organically, and so we're not doing an episode on it. But I wanted to acknowledge it.
It was on the list. We had a John Hughes movie.
Yeah, I had just added it like a month ago.
Oh.
It was Uncle Buck.
I watched Uncle Buck because I had never seen it.
Yeah,
and
it was just on TV, wasn't it? Just like live on. Yeah,
well, we watched it on Tubi.
I have the fucking YouTube TV.
It
was the trial, but because you have to click, I'm canceling 17 times. I inadvertently kept it for this first month. And that's why I thought, because I saw Uncle Buck was on the list.
Yeah. And I just feel like we have to acknowledge that, especially because it's such an important movie. I mean, we don't.
Why?
Because we're not doing an episode on it.
We're doing an episode on Nebraska.
Why don't you go downtown and have a rat and all that thing off your face?
So after we record the episode, we can talk about Uncle Buck if you want. Because I liked it.
Yeah. I mean,
it was not one of those movies that I had.
Hey, if
made a point to not see. I just had never seen it.
Oh, you've never made a point to not see.
Yeah, I try never to make a point to not see.
That's probably a good choice. And it's John Candy at near his pinnacle, I would
say. I was going to say, yeah, he's at the peak of his powers, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of movies that were like, this is John Candy, like ultimate John Candy, and that's one of them.
And it's also the best thing that Macaulay Culkin and that girl, what is her name? Gabby Hoffman?
It was Gabby Hoffman, the little sister.
Yeah.
Yeah, best thing either one of them
ever did. Wow, that's Miles a bold and Maisie. Statement. I mean, it's the reason he got Home Alone.
Mm-hmm.
If the goal was to get the ball as close to the pins without knocking any over,
just quoting the
you
damn movie,
win.
It's so hilarious. You would be champion of the universe.
But it was good. It's a great movie, and I just wanted to acknowledge that that has been stricken from the list because we've all seen it now.
I forgot it was on the list, and I'm retroactively disappointed.
Fair enough. I mean, we could have done an episode on it had we planned.
Hey,
ahead.
If anybody out there, and I mean anybody, like if we can get enough support in this podcast where we would almost necessitate a Patreon, this would be we could do an Uncle Buck like taster. Like, hey, you join our Patreon, you get this kind of shit.
Oh, us talking about movies we've all seen and liked?
Yep.
Perfect.
Sorry, I only paused because we have the window open and somebody yelled outside and
he was agreeing
with
us.
There's cyclists riding by right now. Hey, let's talk about Nebraska.
Yes, let's talk about
Nebraska. No cyclists in Nebraska.
Were there no cyclists?
It's too fucking cold.
I mean, not during the summer, which is when they cycle here in Illinois.
Yeah, it's not like it's warm and balmy in the winter here.
Do you think that Kate cycles at all at her age?
No. I think Kate bitches and reminisces.
I love Kate.
I mean,
didn't she win an Oscar?
She was nominated.
She got nominated for an Oscar for this because of how great she was in this movie.
And before that, like the great Margot Martindale, she was just known as a character actor.
I mean, yeah, she's still known as a character actor.
Is she still alive?
Yep. Checked
Jane
last
Squibb?
Night. Yep. Somehow still alive.
Yeah, you know what?
Bruce Dern's still alive.
If you would have asked me, is he in the 80s? They were like, "There's no way he lives till 2013," and he's still alive 11 years later.
He's made movies since this.
Yeah, he was in The Hateful Eight, and I'm like, he's gonna die any second,
like on camera.
On camera,
is Stacey Keach still alive?
I think he just died last year.
Shit.
Yep, he got it in the Keachster.
Why don't we start talking about the movie?
Yeah, I keep trying to drive us that way, you know, and y'all just keep fucking steering off the
road. Well, you know what? If you took notes, maybe you get to talk.
Just like Brewster trying to leave Montana.
Just walk away.
That's how you're going to bring it back. That's slapshot at best, or scattershot?
Slapshot's on the list.
That's how the movie starts, pretty much, is
yeah, he looks
Woody going for a walk.
Woody is trying to walk away from Montana, and who can blame him?
Right.
Looking like if Forrest Gump never stopped running and stopped drinking water.
And just stopped.
if he was only consumed by running. But then he couldn't run anymore because he was a frail old man. So Woody, played by Bruce Dern, looks like fresh hell stumbling down the highway. A cop picks him up because while he understands fully the desire to leave Montana, this old fool doing it on foot is clearly nuts. And then he's at the police station where then we meet Woody's son, played by Will Forte, David. He has that look of, dad's in custody, must be a day that ends in Y all over his defeated face. Does David know this look well? Yes. David understands. David understands all about parents with mental issues.
You know what's interesting with David's relationship with Woody? And
there's a lot. I mean,
there's a lot to
every
unpack.
Relationship. I mean, not so much with Ross because we don't get very much.
Well, I mean, that's what the movie's about, though. Is about
it is
about
and,
these
and,
relationships,
and that's what I find so interesting about the whole thing is how fluid it is, and just just getting context, finding out, like, clearly David is and Ross have know jack shit about their father before they were born.
Yeah. Oh, that's very clear. Yeah.
Because Woody doesn't talk to anyone.
Well, and that's part of the interesting thing about Woody is he's so stoic, but also they talk about his drinking and they show his drinking and like how it's very clear he has a drinking problem. But he is the most innocuous alcoholic I have ever met in my life.
Yeah, you when they say, you know, Ross is like, oh, he loved the bottle more than us or whatever he says at the very, you know. Mm-hmm. And it, you get the feeling he doesn't really love anything. He's just a defeated old man.
I think, honestly, I think he loves everyone. I think it's the opposite.
I think that's what we find out.
Yes. That's fair.
I think we, well, we can get to it. So David brings Woody back home to Kate, his exasperated wife. She's hardly the picture of mental health either. That was my first impression, because she's just ranting and raving.
That's we just find out that's who she is.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, to her, nothing is not an inconvenience. Yes, I intentionally worded it that way. So why all of this? Well, in modern terms, Woody got fished.
He did.
Only he didn't click on an email or give out his social security number or something like that. He got a letter saying he won $1 million and he would have to mail it back with whatever you
require. A bunch of magazine subscriptions.
He essentially got the letter from Ed McMahon.
Yep.
And it probably was one of, well, no, because it's still valid, I guess. But I was going to say, for all I know, it's lost in the mail from the time where Ed McMahon was still alive. But because David even says, I didn't know they still did this.
Right. Back in 2013, and something tells me ancient.
They didn't really.
I still
really,
get
but
those occasionally.
Do you
really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It's not the Ed McMahon. Well, Ed McMahon never did Publishers Clearinghouse, but I'll still get a random thing.
No, he did different.
No,
one.
That well, is one of those Mandela effects. He never did Publishers Clearinghouse.
Well, no, but he did something just like
he
that.
He did. I can't remember.
It's
what
not
it was,
a
though.
Mandela. I just think he's because they had two of those.
Yeah.
And Publishers Clearinghouse is just the one that everybody seems to know.
It's like, you know, like if he had been
To me, it's not Mandela. I'm just saying, like,
it's like if he had been the spokesperson for Puffs and people were like, oh, it's the Kleenex guy.
I guess.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah.
Or that the Maytag man was anyone other than the guy who tried to molest Dudley.
What?
The Maytag man?
Yeah.
The OG Maytag man?
I don't know about the OG Maytag.
Well, because now the Maytag man is
the guy from Eureka.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the guy who was Carol's, not Carol Seaver. Who was the mom in Growing Pains?
Carol?
No, Carol was Tracy Gold.
I don't know.
All right,
I don't
but whatever.
Care.
Carol's grandfather on the mother's side.
All right.
He was the same guy who in Different Strokes tried to molest Dudley and Arnold.
Oh, okay.
And then he was the Maytag man.
All you had to say was Different Strokes.
What a legacy.
Took the like the
which
longest
you,
way
which
to get
which would
there.
You rather be known for? Maytag commercials? But look, or being in one of the most infamous sitcom episodes of all time.
Which
people
would you
are
rather,
still talking about it.
Which would you rather be known as? The guy that sells stereo equipment or the guy who punched Stacy Keach in the face?
Oh, shit. Well, yeah, luckily for David's sake, he doesn't have to choose.
That's true.
Because he... let's see here. Oh, yes. Yeah. So, however, Woody is a crackpot that believes this information cannot be trusted with the Postal Service, so he must hand-deliver it.
You know what? It is some great logic. I love it.
You know what? And I was thinking, like, every like, road trip movie starts with the dumbest fucking premise you can ever imagine.
Yeah.
And there's such a weird internal logic to this that it is still ridiculous.
Right.
But it's not like we've got to go to It's not like fucking Wayne's World where it just seemed like, I don't even know what your goal is.
Yeah. No, it definitely tracks. Like, if this were legit, like if you were actually winning $1 million, I totally understand. Oh, I don't want that going through the mail.
I'm not trusting the post office with my $1 million.
Right.
At the same time, the $1 million isn't going to come back through the mail in cash.
No. But somebody would steal the ticket.
Somebody did,
and somebody like, does.
Yeah, you know.
Buzz.
I was gonna say, you know, that's the funny part is that
Willy Wonka's not mailing his golden ticket to the chocolate factory.
Well Willy Wonka gave them out.
Yeah,
I don't remember the kid's name. Charlie. That's it.
Augustus Gloop.
Uh huh.
Charlie's family couldn't afford postage.
Well, Grandpa Joe would just fucking get a job,
right?
Well,
Grandpa. Yeah, I love how you know. Side note. That whole family's just bedridden, and then suddenly Grandpa Joe's like, oh, let's go to the fucking chocolate factory. What have you been doing? Shiftless layabout. But as he doesn't have a driver's license due to likely a series of impaired driving offenses, because as we learn from Woody's other son, Ross, Woody is an alcoholic.
Well, he also can't get his truck to run because it's been 10 years.
Yeah, and Kate won't drive him because she like everyone else, knows how fucking dumb this is.
Yeah, and she spent a lifetime of placating him, and so she's like, nope.
Yeah, she's completely had it. So if they're not enough on their plates so far, David's girlfriend just bothers to come by to return the last of his shit after she moves out. And in the least convincing way imaginable, David says he wants her to move back in.
God, he's so pathetic in that scene.
He wants so badly just anyone to show him any kind of affection.
Yeah.
That this woman who has they both have the personality of wallpaper. At least in this one scene. It's like, yeah. it's like you took Fargo and removed all quirkiness.
If that's that scene?
No, yeah.
Well, I love the line about the plants. Like,
oh yeah, you should.
These are plants. Yeah, you have to water them. They're plants.
And what does she? What does she? She picks something up. She grabbed something from the. I couldn't see what it was.
Oh, it was like a dead leaf.
But she put it in her pocket.
Yeah, she did. It's one of those things where sometimes you pick up something and you're like, "Where's the guy?
I'll just figure it out later." Put it in my pocket, yeah.
All right.
That felt very like human real to me when she did
it. But it was just kind of like, I guess if it wasn't a leaf, what the hell was it?
This whole movie, the way it's one of those movies that the way it was directed and acted felt very real, felt, you know, improvised in a way, because it was very conversational and it wasn't like, I deliver a line, well, you deliver a line, I deliver a line.
That's pretty typical of Alexander Payne.
But you can feel that a lot when you watch movies, even if it's executed well, but this one just, The Bear is a lot like that with a lot of the conversations they have. It just feels very organic.
This is very much a film that is script dependent, because I don't feel like there's a lot, like there's no filmmaking tricks. It's a lot of,
I mean, it's well shot, but it's not like crazy shot.
There's very little movement. Everything's just kind of as is. And it allows performances to come through, and the writing is strange, but weirdly intricate.
Yeah. Well, and I think layered. And I was thinking about this last night when I was rewatching this. I think Payne specifically likes stories that don't take place in cities. Like, so many of his movies happen outside of big cities.
Is he from, like, a small town or something?
But even, like, Sideways starts in L.A. but ends up in Napa, right? Like, he's actively avoiding cities.
Which, by the way, I was reading about this, and he was given this script as a, like, somebody was looking for a director for it, but not necessarily asking.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I want to do this.
I could totally see that.
But he was doing about to do Sideways, mm-hmm. and didn't want to do two road trip movies back to back.
That's fair.
So he had to. I forgot what he did in between.
The Descendants between the two?
Yes.
Okay. Which also doesn't take place in a city. It takes place in Hawaii.
In a way, its own sort of road trip.
Right. But yeah, he definitely has that kind of niche to him.
I bet Alexander Payne had a destination wedding.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
What a piece of crap, and expect it's... people to go to that.
Probably didn't. He's probably an introvert. Just knowing his protagonist, he probably doesn't like people that well.
But he likes going places.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I guess I'll shoot a movie in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. I guess I'll shoot a movie where Bruce Dern pees into the into a field four times.
I mean, been you there. Like peeing outside on road trips.
I do. I love peeing outside.
I actually do, too. As a road tripper, I will often just find a spot on the side of the road before I go to some of those nasty gas station bathrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's why she took the leaf.
There you go.
No.
Because she had to pee?
Mm-hmm.
No, you got to wipe.
You don't want to wipe with a dry leaf, though.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, I think she took one of the good
just
ones.
Just crumbles up and...
She took one of the good ones. There were no good ones.
There were.
Those plants were deceased.
Well, maybe they might come back. You'd be surprised. If one of them was a pothos, it'll come back.
I mean, how long could she have really been gone? Act like she just moved out. You didn't notice these starting to die?
That's probably part
of... You know what? Put some of this on yourself.
Fair enough.
I'm just going to accuse everybody of something.
You should.
I'm still smarting from 2 weeks ago when Amanda called me pussyface.
Wow.
I don't remember this at all. All
right, those weren't your exact words.
I didn't think so.
That's just the way I took it.
Vagina face?
Okay.
No.
I have no idea what I said that incited this.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's because you're a monster.
Well, that's true.
Was that Chirag's birthday?
Yes.
Oh, I was probably really drunk.
I wasn't there.
Anyway. yeah, David and this woman, I don't remember her name. Doesn't really matter. She always in this one scene.
Yeah, she's just there to establish how pathetic he is.
But their entire relationship, just defining it, is a complete convoluted mess. They don't even... They're breaking up... Because he didn't ask her to marry her, but then, we can still date. And then also, maybe fuck.
Are we still fucking? That was a great question.
I mean.
Well, he's as confused as we are.
It didn't seem like they were broken up. It seemed like maybe they were taking a break. I don't know.
Or like.
But they also don't act like people who have ever been together.
But I understand her. Well, I think that was part of the point, too, is like, why is he agonizing over this when there's no chemistry? But like. I understand her point of view of, hey, you haven't asked me to marry you. What's the point of this at this point?
It's only been a couple of years. Right, Amanda?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, I've waited 7 years.
Well, that's not David's fault.
No, it's not. I also actually got the ring, so.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah, she got.
Without coercion.
She got a dead plant leaf.
I think David's going to go back to Nebraska and marry a newspaper magnate, so it's fine.
There you go.
No, he's going to hire a magnet that's holding up newspaper on his fridge.
Oh, that's probably closer to accurate.
Weirdly enough, just them trying to define their relationship explains a lot later on. Like the movie is literally just prologue up until this point. We're given this reality of what all these people are like without any idea as to how they got there, which is not, it's weird. It's almost like storytelling in reverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
Because we're at the end product and the whole rest of the movie is almost like therapy.
It is. It's like therapy and it's, in such a weird way, reconnecting a family.
Uh-huh.
You know?
This is like when Gordon Ramsay shows up at your restaurant and not only has to fix your shitty restaurant, but also your shitty family.
Yeah.
And he yells at you until you submit.
And he puts two pieces of bread over your ears.
Calls you an idiot sandwich. Or a donut.
Donut!
Oh, God, I just totally skipped the entire impetus of the movie in my notes here.
What's up?
So Woody is dead set on getting to Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what anyone says, in the face of logic and all that is holy, he needs to get to this marketing office.
By Monday.
By by Monday at the latest.
Right.
Because his offer expires at his $1 million and probably Better Homes and Gardens subscription.
Right.
God, I'm just trying to imagine Bruce Dern reading Better Homes and Gardens. It can't be done.
You know what's interesting is...
Nothing so far.
Right, listeners?
If Woody had just been allowed to walk to Nebraska, he would have gotten there faster.
Almost.
Can we? Yeah, you know, what is the... Well, let's ask the cousins how long it would take.
Right?
Those two fuckers.
I love that, yes, being ridiculed for it. It took you 2 days to drive to Hawthorne. It's Hawthorne,
and right,
right
after he explains...
It was like 600 miles to Hawthorne, I think
750,
he said.
I think he said.
No, that 750 was from where they drove.
It was 750 from Billings.
Okay.
Because they had driven 850 in like 8 hours
but
once.
2 days for 750 miles is insane.
Well, considering you and I drive to New Orleans in one go,
yeah,
all the time, and that's about 950 miles. It's a 12-hour drive.
Neither of you is Bruce Dern.
I mean, I guess if you're driving by yourself and you've got to stop overnight, you don't want to drive straight.
Your
through.
Dad just randomly walks into a bar while you're pumping gas.
Yes, and your father keeps wandering off and probably has to pee a lot. That's like my parents when they take their parents on road trips.
His poor bladder. He drinks a lot. He can't help it. But for some odd reason, well, probably because he realizes, well, my stupid girlfriend who apparently we're not fucking anymore, there's no reason for me to be here. And God knows selling stereos is really high in demand work at a time when no one's buying stereos or much of anything in Nebraska or in Montana. Because
basically, he didn't have anything else going on, so he's like, "Fine, Dad, I'll take you to Nebraska."
I think he realized also that his dad wasn't going to stop.
He even says later on, and this is the thing you can kind of get from David's character, is he's always incredibly earnest. Like he does,
yeah.
He states his intention like later on, where he's like, "Look, I knew you were going to do this. I thought." I wanted to get out, and heaven forbid, I spend some time with my father before
he dies,
which could be any minute.
Any minute.
Which, again, who would have thought? 2024, oh, Bruce Dern's still maybe not kicking.
I will say, I think this movie probably has shown, should have shown people how to cast Will Forte, and that's as the straight man. And let other people be the weirdos around him.
Well, you can't really...
Considering the last thing I saw Will Forte in was MacGruber.
Which was terrible.
Because I just watched that recently because my husband loves stupid movies.
Idiot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's what everybody knows Will Forte for. That and the surprisingly long-running Last Man on Earth.
Yeah.
Which I never watched because...
I think I watched like 2 episodes of it.
If the last man on earth is Will Forte, forget it.
It's going to be Bruce Dern. We all know that.
Bruce Dern is the cockroach that never dies. Look, this is not meant as a referendum on me like saying like, fuck Bruce Dern.
So we're 10 minutes into the movie at this point. Let's move it along, guys. I got things to do.
Wow.
Yeah, right. Anyway.
We know you, Amanda. That's not true.
I haven't eaten today.
Well, that's not my fault.
Yeah.
I came straight from work home so we could podcast.
They have snacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the liquor store.
Yeah, you can get a Toblerone.
Yeah.
But they don't sell Toblerone.
You can get
not
Kit
anymore.
Kat?
No, nope. That's a bummer.
They don't sell Kit Kat.
What?
Pickles.
They do have pickles.
There you go.
Pickles and olives.
And, perfect.
That's the start of a charcuterie
board. And Luxardo cherries. You could have just been gnawing on Luxardo cherries.
Okay.
It's a very expensive snack.
So, yeah, they get on the road.
And I love that the first, like, they're not very far into it, and Mount Rushmore comes up.
I love that he has zero interest in looking at Mount Rushmore.
And, you know, at first, I'm like, what do you, fuck you. Come on. It's a national landmark. And
but you, have you been to Mount Rushmore?
But then, I'm not.
Okay. But that's why you say that.
But then, he explains, he starts critiquing the lack of effort.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and just the fact that the rocks. And I'm like, I'm swayed.
It's a good point. Like Lincoln doesn't even have an ear.
I'm like, huh. Right on. I'm with that. Okay. I mean, if you would have just driven past it, that's just as much of a thrill as standing there for a few minutes.
Yeah, and it
really
it
is
kind of underwhelming as like, oh, a thing hey, to look, see.
It's a bunch of heads. Cool. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, speaking of heads, Woody busts open.
Oh, God.
Poor Woody.
He did it to himself.
He busted his head open and lost his teeth.
The search for the teeth was great.
I love that that's the only joke that Woody tells the entire time is really just teaching his son that making a joke out of this to your father, it will be frowned upon.
Because I will turn it back on you and make it worse.
Because...
I think I got up and got a drink or something. Did I miss... Like, did Woody just wander off, or how did he fall down? I just saw him coming into the hotel room. Oh, no,
they made it so you assumed he snuck out and got drunk.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. I didn't know if I had missed something
specific.
No,
they didn't show anything specific before that.
But yeah, he's in the hospital, and he realizes, I'm doing my teeth.
And he just smiles. Your teeth, yep.
Dropped him by the tracks.
First of all, kudos for even realizing that that's where you would have dropped them.
Yeah.
Well, especially for somebody with such a tenuous control of his faculties.
I'm sure it's not the first time. Yeah.
But then also, to find them.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the discussion of whether or not they are his teeth. I don't think these are your teeth. Are they not? No, who else's teeth would they be, Dad? Come on.
Oh, wait, no, these aren't my teeth.
Yeah, that,
that was so great.
That was great.
Well, that was after they got out of the hospital and the doctor, nurse, or whomever stitched him up because they were telling him, yeah, we're on a road trip because I won $1 million. And he's like, congratulations, that'll almost pay for a night in the hospital.
That was great. That was a good joke, too.
Even in Montana or wherever they are.
Yeah, wherever, yeah. I don't know where they are right now.
I think they were in Wyoming at that point.
Yeah.
Well, not much happens until they get to Hawthorne.
South Dakota, probably.
Hawthorne, of course, where nothing ever, ever happens.
Or changes.
Whew.
Hometown of the Grant family. A family of indifferent strangers.
Oh, man.
I have to say, when they finally arrived in Hawthorne and the interaction of all the family members and everything, it very much reminded me of my family.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Especially the way they talk to
Your
each
dad
other.
Your dad is Rance Howard.
During
messed up.
During the football game, where it's just like there's conversation, but it's not really conversation.
They're not looking at each other,
saying things to say things. Like, who's playing? It's Detroit versus Chicago. And then the thing about the car. I got rid of that years ago. I thought you still had it. And I'm like, I have heard my grandfather and some of my uncles have this conversation.
His foot hurts.
The best was when they first got there and the cousins and the dad are sitting on the couch and, you know, it's like, well, what do you guys have been up to? And they just didn't answer. And then the father says something like, well, he did the jail for a bit.
Yeah. And then I don't know who that older woman, I've seen her in a lot of stuff too.
Yeah.
But he's like, don't bring in that up. Well, clearly nothing else has ever happened to these two.
No.
Mm-mm.
Because it even was a Herculean effort to get them to move over enough so Will Forte could sit on the couch.
Oh, man.
And I'm not sure if David is trying to entertain himself or just trying to fill the awkward silence.
I think those are the same thing.
Yeah.
In the situation.
Yeah. Because, you know, they're trying to, like, oh, do you hear that, Dad? Uncle whatever's foot hurts.
Huh?
Which is basically Woody's response to everything.
Yeah, Woody does say, huh? A lot.
Well, he's probably 90% deaf.
Yes, 90% deaf and slightly... I feel like he's got... He knows more of what is happening than people are willing to give him credit for, but he also can't really hear. Like, he definitely does remind me of my grandpa in a lot of ways.
Oh, for sure. I think he's actively indifferent to most things.
Him and Billy Bob Thornton from Sling Blade should have like a rap album together. Yeah, it's great. I didn't even have to participate. You already know what's going on.
Yep.
Yeah, we get the not joke about the distance of the driving and the time, and those two are possibly the dumbest two people, dumbest two characters I've ever seen.
I love, because they had a legit reason to give him shit about how long it took them to get there for that distance.
But he also explains right after why it took that long, and then that gets in the way of my... I had this great line on deck. Hold on. What were you driving, a garbage truck?
But then what was great about it was that they then talked about their drive and how fast it was. Mm-hmm. And he does the math. He goes, like, you'd have to be going 150 miles an hour to do that.
And then, Kate, probably against her own wishes. Can you imagine Kate on a bus having to listen to that for how long?
Oh, I think she sat quiet on the bus and just because thought about what she was going to say.
I think she probably sat quiet on the bus, too.
Yeah.
I feel like she's like that with her family.
Yeah, you're probably... Yeah.
But not necessarily everyone else.
Yeah.
Like, there's probably a reason that she's like that with her family. Again, kind of reminding me of my grandmother. She just says shit sometimes.
Really? Like, she'd be like, oh, she was a nice girl. Huge whore.
She's just matter of fact.
She wouldn't say it like that, but she'd probably say something nicer.
She's a hussy.
Well, she wasn't being mean. In fact, she even said it.
Just telling the truth.
Yeah, she even said, I'm not saying it as a bad thing. I'm just saying she always liked her.
I'm just telling the man and she was a whore.
And you know that Kate doesn't frown upon it because everyone was trying to get into her pants.
And it turns out the reason that Bruce Dern chose her over the newspaper girl is because she would put out.
And the newspaper girl is just, like, the sweetest hometown, oh, it's fine, you know, basically I wouldn't put out. She's like, I got married and had children and have 8 grandchildren, been running this paper together, and it's like...
Until he died.
What a lovely story, and you could have been stuck with Woody, so it seems like it worked out better
for you. I still feel like she has, there's still a soft spot there.
Sure.
Well, yeah, it seems like he was her first love.
We even see that at the end a little bit. Yeah.
And so they go and visit Woody's dead side of the family. She's got a little bit to say about all of them.
That, so fucking great.
That also reminded me so much of visiting my family, and like, it's my mom usually, but she's like, oh, that's where so-and-so is buried, he was your uncle, da 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 da. That's so-and-so, oh yeah, this is what happened to him, and driving through the country, I'm from a rural area, and my mom being like, oh, I remember when there used to be a house there, and there used to be a house there, and like, I used to ride the school bus with them, and just like all of the reminiscing.
Yeah, but did you ever go to a graveyard and critique dead people?
I mean, it's great. And what's amazing is you can the awkwardness of it as she talks, and the more she says, and the more like Will Forte's character kind of like, he's like, oh my God, my mother is a monster. And the whole time Woody is sitting there not saying anything, but probably thinking, I don't want to fucking talk about any of this shit. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful.
Kind of talking shit about his family, and like, I think he's also... I feel like it was a little bit of him realizing his own mortality as she's sitting there pointing out that person's dead and that person's dead and that person's dead and that person's dead. And he's just kind of like, fuck. Well, and he just kind of wanders off and gets back in the car.
He never wanted to come to this town, let alone this graveyard. Yeah.
That was maybe the most energy he showed in the entire movie was saying, I don't want to go there. Yeah.
And you see why.
Yeah. The leeches came out.
Oh, and
the leeches.
The creepiest, or the to me, at least, I think you'd have to be inhuman to not think so, but they go to the grave of Woody's brother who died when he was 2.
Yeah.
And that's who David's named after. That's fucked up to look down, see your name.
And they give you that shot of him looking down at it.
Yeah. Like, and yeah, it's creepy for him on top of it, but that's just something now for him to store in the back of his head.
And I think that helps with his arc in the second half of the movie, because it is a memento mori, like, specifically for him,
mm-hmm.
in that sense, which is really nice and thoughtful in the film, for sure.
Well, he just, like you guys said earlier, like, seems like he doesn't know really anything about his parents prior to his own memory,
right.
of his parents. So, like, he doesn't even really know how they got together or anything until this visit to Hawthorne, where he really starts learning about what they were like when they were young.
Finding out that his dad's plane got shot down in Korea.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And that he, you know, had PTSD and all this different stuff.
Piece by piece, you're just learning this man's tragic life. Like, he was sleeping next to the brother that died.
In the same bed. And somehow didn't catch it.
So, like, this is a guy who probably has had survivor's guilt his entire life.
Oh, sure.
Maybe. I mean,
maybe it's not in the forefront of his mind, but I think that's always stuck with him. I mean,
he seems
like a guy who carries a lot.
I'm sure he was affected by it, but at the same time, like, back then, kids died a lot. I don't think it was as tragic as it is now. Not that children dying isn't a tragedy, yeah. but it happened mm-hmm. with such regularity that people were a little desensitized to it.
It was probably the 40s, early 40s, early 40s, late 30s.
How old was he when the brother died?
He was older.
A little bit older.
He was older than him.
Well, yeah. The grave was 37 to 39, so it was 39 it? When his brother died. So yeah, back then.
So she didn't need to take notes, apparently. You can take it from me.
So yeah, I'm not saying it wouldn't have affected him, but like that was a lot more ubiquitous back then, so it didn't have as much of an impact on people.
But that compounded with things like surviving the plane crash mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff adds up, for sure.
Well, and I think part of that is what made him start drinking, because mm-hmm. newspaper lady is like, well, you know, yeah, he started young. But
well, also, there's nothing else to do.
She's like, there's nothing else to do. Again, growing up in a town like that, you're right. There's really nothing else to do but drink and screw. There wasn't.
Right.
Unless you left the town. But
I would burn that town down.
But, she says that's when she's like, oh, well, his plane got shot down. And then they find the newspaper article. And he's like, oh, wow. Like, they're just kids. Because
mm-hmm.
that's something I had to think about with my grandpa, you know, getting shipped off to World War II at 18 years old from some little bitty town, having never been anywhere, and then you're getting shipped across the ocean to fight in a war. That's insane.
Yeah.
Speaking of insane, Stacy Keach shows up.
Dude's a piece of shit.
Ed Pegram is the worst.
And Ed Pegram is the first person that we know, because Woody's like, I used to know everybody, like, I used to own this shop. Who are these guys? Do you know so-and-so? Like, I used to know everybody in this bar.
Because he mentioned that Ed Pegram borrowed his air compressor.
Yeah.
And then lo and
behold,
which
you know that the air compressor was like the fucking sled.
It's Rosebud in this movie.
I think I just stopped taking notes as to what happened and just started making...
It became the everybody finding out that he won $1 million, because when they met Ed Pegram,
he literally says, don't mention anybody. The money.
And at first I thought that was like, everyone's going to think you're insane. but maybe that is what David thought.
I think that's what David thought.
He could not have foreseen that this entire...
That everybody was going to put their hands out.
Yeah, this town of rubes was not only going to believe it, but...
And the worst part about this is the way they do it. Like, everybody tries to make Woody feel guilty. Mm-hmm. Like, you owe us
because
this
it's
money.
Clearly what they've done to him his entire life.
Yeah. And he is...
Because why would he want to go back to a town where everybody made him feel less than?
And because he... Turns out he was that guy that was nice and would do stuff for people, he got taken advantage of in that way.
This is where the movie really gets...
Like, as shady as Pegram, literally is openly shady towards him, and Woody's still like, yeah, Ed's a good guy. And it's like, come on, man.
But I think we all know that or know of that person who doesn't speak ill of anyone.
Sure.
And, it's just a let bygones be bygones type. And no matter, like, and he may not, he's not even a, but in Woody's case, he doesn't, he seems blissfully, well, not blissfully, there's no bliss. he just seems fairly unaware of, he just knows he feels shitty in this town. He doesn't really, I don't know that he understands why.
That's fair.
And because he is so trusting, he just knows that being here makes him miserable. And
it's like not knowing a leech is a leech, but knowing it's making you feel bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he enjoys what when everybody wants to congratulate him. Oh, sure. Yeah. Now, I feel like a somebody now. He even tells David when, drink with your father, be somebody. Like, that's his idea of being somebody.
Right.
Because in Hawthorne, the bar is underwater. And it's really easy to clear. But no one seems very interested in clearing it.
What's to clear? There's no, you leave Hawthorne, there's nothing to clear.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of there.
Right.
This place sucks.
But that's where all this, you said the bar, but also the bar is the only place where there's any kind of sense of status.
Okay.
Like, it's got the double meaning, yeah.
No, that's not what, they did not mean. The bar is not literally the bar.
No, I know that, Dave. I'm just saying that...
Jeez, Dave.
I'm just saying, it is like, both, that would be nice if that was somehow in there, but...
Because that's where we see people, like, where people, like, have their status within town is how they're being interacted with at the bar.
Yeah, it's not like they go to town hall.
Right.
Or
church in some places would be an example of it.
I mean,
we don't see that here.
Probably is a place, but just it's not where this crowd hangs
out.
Yeah. This is... One of those little bitty towns, again, like where I grew up, where there's one bar, that everybody goes to. There's one restaurant.
Yeah.
There's church.
I bet the cousins go to church every Sunday.
I don't know. I can barely even imagine them getting off the couch.
Well, they got off the couch and put on ski masks.
True.
There you go.
They were motivated.
That's true. Fucking idiots.
But yeah, not only just the town, but so after the graveyard, they go to Woody's old house.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously no one's been there in forever. But for Woody, very much there's ghosts in this house.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is the scene where we find out exactly who Woody is. Like, we've gotten, and within his family, we've seen what the town thinks of him, how they treat him. But then all that mistreatment and is one thing. But he goes into his parents' old room. He said, I'd get whooped.
They would have whooped me if I was in here, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he's looking out the window, I don't know if this is his motivation, because he's very, obviously this is not a guy who lacks motivation. If he wants something, he'll be dogged, even if it's stupid, like walking over state lines
to Lincoln, Nebraska,
to a marketing office. But he's headstrong in that way. But this is where that little streak of defiance comes in, and he's, and I feel like he gets a little, it's sadness, but also almost like, not pride, but like there's a moment of good riddance, mm-hmm. where there's no smiling. He takes no joy in it, but you know when he says, "Guess no one will whip me now," or no one's around to whip me now.
Yeah. Or no one's left to whip me now. Something like that.
I guess no one's gonna whip me now is what I think is what he said. But that, I mean, that whole memory lane scene is pretty phenomenal.
And it does. It's very forward, like for a guy who's, you know, very clearly near death as a character. Like, he's still forward thinking as a person, and that's kind of interesting.
I think he takes a measure of satisfaction.
Yeah.
Even no matter how small, that, well, I'm in here now, and you're all fucking dead.
Yeah.
And I got out of this place.
Yeah.
I didn't do much, but I did more than any of you. You got
the billings.
Yeah, I did more than you motherfuckers. Come whip this.
Get some.
He turns into a hobo with a shotgun.
Oh, R.I.P. Rucker Hauer.
The stupid cousins. I'm sure I'm skipping a few.
Well, there was like the confrontation about like with the family about the money, and then the wife was like, "What are you talking about? That money came from my family when my parents died."
Oh my god!
Yeah,
that
was perfect because I'm like, "Yeah, call their asses out on that shit."
And this brings back kind of what Amanda was talking about earlier about how like she's only that way with certain people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you're coming after Woody, and she's fucking had it. She's like,
"No one's allowed to talk to Woody like that but me."
Yeah.
I have a reason to be pissed at him. I got to live with this.
Yeah.
That guy did everything he could for you fuckers, and all he ever did was take advantage of him, make fun of him. You think that just cash is what it is? No, this guy did things for you that you would have had to pay somebody to do.
Yeah.
He did it out of the kindness of his heart and because you asked him. And now you come to him for money because you know if he had it, he'd give it to you.
Yeah. We also skipped the steakhouse scene, which was just, I love the fact that Woody's like, "I want meatloaf."
There's no meatloaf on the menu. This is another scene that reminded me very much of my family. "I want meatloaf. It's not on there." "Well, what do you think is good?" "Well, I really like the tilapia." "Oh, no. I'm not getting the tilapia."
She's right.
Yes, but it was just the way.
Well, she also should have let Woody get the fried chicken, though.
Being as
my mom and my grandmother, neither one would have let their husbands have the fried chicken.
Let him have the man.
He's like a million years old on death's door. Let him have fried chicken.
My grandpa made it to 99, and I spent, I swear, the last 15 to 20 years telling my mom, "The man is 85, 90, whatever years old. Just let him do what he wants."
Well, yeah, no, my grandfather, who made it to 96, was like 90 when he got diagnosed with diabetes. And then everybody's like, "No, you can't have a piece. You can't have bread with dinner." And I'm like, "Who gives a fuck? He's 90.
My grandfather.
Like, because they'll miss him when he passes. Of course, passes,
but let him like, enjoy what he's got.
At a certain point, right. It's like, it's time, man. Just enjoy what you got left.
My grandmother, when my grandfather got diabetes, and yeah, he was in his mid-70s, I think, but she was always up his ass about not, don't eat this. When she passed, he didn't even last another full year.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all like, however she was talking to him, fuck that. If this man wants to eat dog biscuits out of the fucking jar on the table or on the kitchen table.
Was this the grandpa that liked the dog ice cream?
Yes.
Yes.
Was this the same one that had the storage unit full of porn?
No, that was my father.
Oh, that was your father. Sorry.
Other side of the family.
Okay.
No.
It's a cuter story that he liked the dog ice cream. Because I can understand why you'd like the dog safe ice cream.
Although, if you...
Because there's nothing wrong with it. There's just no ingredients in it that would make a dog sick.
If you want the story about the port and the storage
unit. There is a podcast with that story.
There is a podcast called Unfucking Relatable.
But I don't think that episode is available. Well, no, it is somewhere.
Maybe,
I know somebody was telling me they were going back and listening to the episodes. Oh, and God. I asked them why.
So just in general, as sort of slow and quiet as this movie is, it's very relatable. It's every Midwestern family, pretty much.
It is. It's very much the waspy Midwestern family vibe.
It comes in waves where it's nothing's happening. And then it just takes one person to get set off by some... And frankly, it's usually Kate.
It's usually Kate. Kate flashed a gravestone.
That was so great. This is what you missed.
I didn't know he was buried here.
This is what you missed.
But this movie is very clearly subdued on purpose, and like even when there is wild stuff happening, it's never explosive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very much like we're gonna hold on to this pace and let it happen, and it feels much more human in that sense when it works that way.
And when Kate chastises the whole family, it's just like it's the same. It's sort of the same way she would say it to Woody, but in a more like. She's got all the righteous indignation.
Right. And in talking about her performance and what's so great about it is she is big, but she's not like everybody loves Raymond big, right? Because that would destroy the movie if she was that big. And she hit that level perfect in this movie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as I don't think Will Forte is funny, I think he's perfect for this movie.
Yeah,
I forgot who they were, but the people who they were looking at for both his and Bruce Dern's parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, none of these would have worked.
No. I mean, the funniest thing is, like, the person that's the biggest in this movie now is Odenkirk, but at the time he was not super well known.
No, because this would have been still mid-Breaking Bad.
Right. He might not have been in Breaking Bad yet.
I think he was. This would have been probably like season 2 or 3 of Breaking Bad. So okay. He would have just been introduced.
Right. So if people knew him, he would have been from Mr. Show, and that's pretty much it.
And they're probably wondering, where's David Cross?
Yeah.
But that's... Vincent D'Onofrio's mentally challenged nephews steal the letter.
So fucking stupid.
Okay.
That's those what they guys, look like to me. They look like Vincent so D'Onofrio, dumb. Men in Black Vincent, or current Vincent D'Onofrio.
Or Full Metal Jacket Vincent D'Onofrio.
They don't look like that, though. They definitely look more like Kingpin Ms. Vincent D'Onofrio.
Fair enough. I just meant like mentality and...
I still think it's more Men in Black Vincent D'Onofrio in that case.
Egger suit.
But yeah, Ed Pegram, who thinks of himself as the local tough, and
he's the king of the town.
And by the way, I don't know what the fuck Kate is talking about. He sucks at singing. He's terrible.
Well, I mean, compared to the guy that was up there before him.
Wow.
He always did have a nice voice.
For what, I wonder. But he's been trying to intimidate David into agreeing to give over money that, of course, Ed feels like he's owed somehow and never really explained.
And I feel like David should have just been like, oh yeah, what about the air compressor, motherfucker? And he wanted to say it, and he never did.
He did. I can't remember now. I was very stoned watching the movie. Which is why I'm sober now. Because it's always one or the other.
Fair enough.
Never both.
Should be either or both. That way you're in the same mindset, so it's easier to
recall. No, because I think it's important that I soberly look at these notes and try to make sense of it.
Okay.
But there were a lot of things that I was like, David, say this.
Yeah. That's the point. Is it's constantly like, what, you got to stand up for yourself, right? Your dad doesn't stand up for himself. Don't do this too, you know.
I forgot what the actual thing that's was it the thing that sets him off.
It was him making fun of his dad when they see that it's a bullshit.
Certificate.
And that is so sad. I mean, you see it coming, but it's so satisfying when he punches him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's fucking.
But it was something specific that he said. Like he was.
Yeah, he was gonna walk away.
Yeah. And then dude said one more thing, and he's like, "You know what? Nope."
Because I know he was saying stuff about like, yo, if it weren't for the fact that your mom put out, you wouldn't even be here.
He said that.
So like, there were plenty of opportunities.
I mean, when he told. When Pegram told him in front of his dad that his dad cheated on his mom, that was real fucking shitty.
Yeah. And that's the one time I think we actually see shame.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Woody's normally, like stoic to the point of not alive. Oh, that's what I was thinking of. He could be the third yin yang triplet.
Oh, nice.
that look that just washes over him in that moment. And which was odd because David talking to his father about his parents gets like no response whatsoever.
Right.
Yeah. He's like, did you guys ever love each other? And he's like, basically
it never came up.
Never came up. We never talked about having kids. But he never even talked about it. He's like, well, you know, I like screwing and your mom's Catholic, so I figured we'd probably end up having kids.
But also they love each other.
I think that's part of their dynamic too, is that like that was probably something he's been saying their entire lives or something like
that.
And over time it's gotten not funny.
Sure.
But also, again, at that time, like now, you have a conversation with your partner about having kids. In
the 50s, or 60s,
there was no conversation. You had kids. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Unless for some reason you weren't able to.
Right.
There was never really a question as to whether or not that was something you were going to do.
But it's even just him talking, like just how they met and everything. Well, that happened.
That's kind of how it works in small towns. Mm-hmm. You just end up marrying your high school sweetheart, and either you stay together forever or you get divorced after 2 years.
And honestly, antagonistic as they are,
I moved.
Oh yeah,
as antagonistic as they are when I was 18. Other, I think it worked out pretty good for Woody and Kate. I think that they are the person they should be with.
I think that they are in every sense, partners.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's more what it is. I think that they're more a unit than they are.
Well, and maybe that's part of the reason that Woody gets treated like shit, too, is that in a place that is rooted in that kind of traditional values and at in a time period when that was a thing, Kate was always the one in charge.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to be cheesy, but. Like, but in that
Kate
way,
wears the pants in the family.
No, I just mean like in that way, they do sort of complete each other. They fit.
Yeah.
And that she's very overbearing and he's very not in confrontation.
Well, you always got to have one.
See? Yin yang triplets.
One or the other.
There's the yin yang twins. No. He's going to be the third one.
Yes, but then what's Kate?
Plus 8.
I hate you.
But yeah,
I'm just saying there's yin yang coming out the yin yang.
If you've got a soft spoken, like doesn't really stick up for themselves, you need a fiery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't take no shit.
You need the ball buster.
That's I keep bringing up my grandparents, but that's literally my mother's parents. My grandpa was very soft spoken. Took a lot to get him angry. My grandma's freaking firecracker.
Yeah.
And she's his defender.
Mm hmm.
His advocate.
But also she makes the decisions.
But we'll also beat him with a broom if he needs
to. She also makes the decisions.
But I feel like ultimately she she wants what's best for him, and clearly walking to fucking Nebraska was not high on her list.
Yeah.
Right. But she makes the decisions that he's indifferent about as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's
it takes
important.
A lot of just the way.
Yeah.
Because he's carrying plenty as is. And so sure. He is very noncommittal about everything. But again, if it matters to him, it will.
Like that fucking $1 million.
That's right.
So we're getting close to them leaving town, but we do have this one other scene that I do want to point out.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to mention Stacy Keach now has another scar on his face.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love the shot at the end when you see the big red welt on his face.
And
it's
love
great.
That. Well, I guess it's technically not the last we see him.
Right.
Yeah.
I would have preferred it in a weird way, but I understand completely why they brought him back for... Yeah. Yeah.
One last look.
But we get the scene where it's the brothers and the parents in the car, and they get confused about whose farm it is. They think it's Stacy Keach's farm.
Well, because Kate says so.
She right. says so. She's and like, then, oh, that's so and so.
She's been giving a play-by-play of every lot for the and every plot.
That's what I mean. That's my mom. Anytime I go visit and we drive through the country, it's like, oh, this is this.
Does she ever say, hey, that guy owes us a thing and maybe I should go there?
They walk in, take out the air compressor from the barn, and they're in the car driving away. And
you know what? And we're led to believe that this is going to be this great heartwarming
right,
moment.
Right. And they're like, you happy now, Dad? And Dad, and he's like, you got your air compressor back. And Dad's, and Bruce is like, that's not my air compressor.
He's like, that was so-and-so's farm. Why didn't you say anything? I don't know.
I didn't know what the,
I didn't know what you were doing. I thought you guys were stealing it for yourself.
You boys running off all the, you know, like you do. I don't know what you're doing.
It was so perfect. And then... Yeah, then they had to come back and put it away, and the people show up, of course.
I didn't need that.
You know what I like?
I thought that was a nice little quirky thing, but at the same time, I was like, I didn't need them.
You know what I like about it, though?
That whole other thing.
Why are you both in the back seat? Oh, we were just resting.
Yeah. We're just sitting back here.
Which just goes back to the whole mom, Kate putting out thing. It kind of reverberates to that, which is nice, which is a nice little callback. And the brothers having to run back to the car. It was nice. I really enjoyed that.
And it looked like Kate almost forgot about them.
Oh, I don't think she cared. She was probably just like, they'll find their way back.
She was like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah. She's like, they'll figure it out. Also, I get to drive? Great.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess we'll just go right ahead to the moment of truth, which is... Woody gets hospitalized again, too.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Sorry, it's become so commonplace at this point.
He breaks out of the hospital and keeps the gown on under his clothes.
I do appreciate that the man actually put clothes on, though, like a normal person, and you didn't get the trope of the guy walking bare ass down the street.
It was just a matter of time. He needs to get to this place. I don't have time to take this robe off.
Also, if I don't put pants on, they might not let me through the door.
Yeah, like, he's not so incoherent. He's just stubborn.
Yeah. But the visual of the coat and the jeans and the robe, it's just great.
It's actually not a bad choice. It looked cold out there.
Yeah, so a little extra layer.
And he's a frail, fresh hell-looking old man.
God. I don't know how they got him to look even more rough as the movie went on. Like, he looked so bad at the beginning of the movie.
I think they just didn't have him just not trim his beard or cut his hair and just kept letting it grow wild. I mean, look at Clint Eastwood now.
I think when they were driving, they just, you know, let him hang his head out the window.
There you go.
Oh, like a dog? Well, fair enough.
So we want to go ahead to what he gets. He gets the ticket back,
yeah,
or the letter.
Yeah,
goes to the office, and in the least surprising thing in the entire movie, oh, you're not a winner.
Sorry, your numbers don't match.
There was a brief moment though where I thought maybe,
really?
Only because we've. Nobody has believed. I didn't believe. Nobody really thought that maybe he would have actually. Been a winner, and you know his son would have been like, "Holy fuck, really?"
I think in a different director's vision, maybe. But I don't.
Well, if you hadn't been following the film literally like Lucy pulling the football away from Charlie Brown right at the moment of glory multiple times to this point.
To be fair,
this wasn't the time. Well, I guess it makes sense that maybe this is the time he finally gets one.
Well, especially since it's the one where everybody the whole time is like, Lucy's going to pull the football away.
Yeah, like nobody expected him to actually win. Nobody thought he was going to win.
Nobody thought that they'd take that air compressor. But or no. It wasn't that they stole the air compressor. It's odd is that it was the wrong air compressor. Like, oh, what a great way to just let just deflate that balloon. I love that subverting expectation. Yeah. Shit.
I had forgotten about the air compressor scene. What, like, because it's been since 2013 since I watched this movie, and I was like, are they just gonna keep driving?
I did too. I don't know why it didn't occur to me that they might actually take it back. For whatever reason, I thought they'd just be like, well, shit, we just stole somebody's air compressor and then just keep going. I don't know
most
why.
People would have.
I thought they would have. I thought at most they were going to just dump it out of
the vehicle. Like, not even dump it, just like set it.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Yeah. But then if it's not for the fact that Kate's like, those are nice people. What's wrong with you?
The only people she's nice about in the entire movie.
And it happens to be the people that she mistakenly told her sons was Ed Pegram. Technically, Kate, this one's on you, but of course, let's turn it around on the boys.
I love her.
Well, that's another, like, rural interaction.
No, that's a mom interaction.
But going back to them sitting in the back seat and the people actually pulling up, like, you know, we live in the Chicagoland area. If you come home and somebody's just sitting...
You're calling the cops.
...at your house... And they're sitting in the back seat, and even if it's somebody you know, you're going to be like, what are you doing? As opposed to, hey, what you doing in the back seat? Oh, okay. Well, hey, you want to come in for a visit?
Hey, like, remember us? You haven't seen us in 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. And that would totally happen. Just be like, oh, you're, like, I could go to somebody's house, and they'd be like, oh, you're Bob's daughter? Oh, yeah. Why don't you, I haven't seen you since you were this big. Why don't you come in for some lemonade or whatever?
I would, Joan, but I'm stealing your air compressor.
Actually, I'm returning it right now. So yeah, he finds out that he didn't win, and she's like, "Do you want a hat or a seat cushion?"
She's like, "I can give you something." Yeah. And she's, bless her heart, she's seen this before, and she tells
that's
him
the funniest.
But she
part
hasn't changed her predatory ways.
That's the funniest part to me is that, like, oh, I hope you guys didn't come very far.
Billings, Montana.
And that goes right in the another one.
Yeah.
And yeah, he'll take the hat.
I mean, I didn't get the impression that the woman that was in the office ran the sweepstakes.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, she's not.
Because you were like, oh, like her predatory. She's just works there.
I don't know. Like, she's the only
she's
one
not
in the
cold
office.
Calling the man.
Well, she's close. She's cold mailing.
Well, all right. Well, direct mail has been around for a very long time, and sadly, there are like a handful of businesses who still use it. The one I work for is still one of them, and I've been trying to tell them for years.
I mean, somebody...
It's not 1988.
Somebody still works for Value Pack, because we still get them every month.
Oh, yeah, they store at my storage facility.
Yeah. I still open them and look at them. It's almost always just HVAC and like gutter cleaners, but sometimes there's a good coupon in there.
I love.
Yeah, sometimes there might be an Aurelio's or something, or
Rico Benny's or Chiba.
Sure,
Japanese.
Rico Benny's. Where the fuck? Where are you getting coupons
from the Value Pack?
I know, but that place doesn't even exist.
This anymore. News is. It feels like it's more heartbreaking for Will Forte's character than it is for Woody. Woody goes. He kind of processes that he didn't win, and he's just like.
Well, yeah, because again, it's like. Well,
yeah,
great. Another example of how I'm a failure.
But also,
but
I think
this
he
whole
moves
journey
on better.
Was something for him to do.
Yeah, I think he's just better at moving on.
Oh, for David?
No, for Woody.
No, I disagree. I think Woody has had an entire life of disappointment, and this is just another one. And he was hope and because he's not he's a person who's become accustomed to disappointment.
Mm.
So he does.
Sure.
So he's not going to appear. Can you imagine
that
character appearing crestfallen by anything?
But I also don't think he's devastated because of that. I think he's like, okay, moving on, because it's like, okay, I didn't win the $1 million.
To be fair, it's I don't think the money's part of it, but the adoration of people when he felt like he was some that's sure, somebody.
That, definitely, that is a thing.
And he, like, oh, actually, hold on. So, yeah, the weight of loss, tragedy, never making it. And he just, his whole life is just probably felt like a failure.
Sure.
And that, and we get the first, or the second, I guess, really human, nah, I think maybe it's like the third. But there's a first time in reference to his family, his sons. Like, I just wanted to leave something for you guys. And because he knows, he feels like he's wasted his entire life. And that's what everyone's always told him.
Because, yeah, Will Forte asked him, he's like, why was this so important to you? Like, you've got plenty of money and you can't drive anyway. So what do you need a truck for? Well, I thought it'd be nice to leave you boys a truck. And I just wanted an air compressor.
Because where, yeah.
So that I could do some painting.
Yeah, because where he's from, like a brand new truck, well, all of a sudden you're the fucking toast of the town.
Yeah, the cat's meow.
Yeah.
Which I love the fact that he goes out and buys the truck and the air compressor.
I do too. Like he gets to sort of not completely, but he knows that this is the last time his dad's probably ever going to set foot in Hawthorne ever again.
Right. And it's also the first time we see him being a decisive person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a turning point for both of the characters, which is nice.
Well, we as if it wasn't abundantly clear, the fact that he was willing to drive his dad all this way for fool's gold.
Right. I mean, he is his father's son, for sure.
He is, what we don't get from, what we never got from Ross is any feeling of, like, Ross resents his father.
Sure.
And David always, like his father, has wanted approval. But his approval wasn't some shitty towns, it was his own father.
Mm-hmm.
And now he sees why he never had it. It's because of these shitty people. In this shitty town.
Well, I think it's also one of those things where Woody, probably never knew that David was looking for that approval.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Because he's fairly oblivious.
Yeah.
But again, that's his upbringing.
Right.
He had multiple siblings. One died, and that's going to affect the parenting, too.
Yeah.
And who knows? They maybe blamed him for not getting sick, too. Who the fuck knows? People are weird, especially in this town.
So, yeah, we get that beautiful drive through downtown where he's like, David, get your head down.
It's literally a victory lap.
It's perfect.
And he lets his dad have it.
Yep.
He it's not even let. He wants him to have it.
And it feels like a full-blown parade.
It does.
Like, ticker tape parade.
As much
going down the
as
street.
Much enthusiasm
hey, Woody,
as could be.
Looking good, man. Can I bring something up, though?
Sure.
We're in this truck. It's this new truck. Which
it's a five-year-old Ford Ranger.
It's 5 years old, so it's like new. I guess this did take place in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, when is the movie supposed to take place? Because of the gear shift on the truck. I don't remember the last time I saw the by-the-steering-wheel gear shift on a vehicle.
It would have been a 2008 Ford Ranger.
But so I feel like I haven't seen those since the 90s. Like, my 1995 Grand Prix had the console gear shift. The last car that I had that was like that was...
But it's a truck.
My 91... not my Camaro. My 85 Oldsmobile had
I think
one of those.
Trucks... I think, David, I think you have a point there. I think the gear shift on the steering column lasted longer in trucks because of...
I think
of,
so, too.
Because yeah. of... Just the fact that you want that floor space.
But that
space.
Just caught me off guard. I was like, that seems like something from the 90s, not a relatively new
I didn't
new
see
truck.
It as too
to
old
be
old
fair,
truck.
No one uses fucking cell phones in this movie. Not that you would want to call any of these people.
Right. Or if there's much signal out in the middle of Nebraska.
Right. So it very much does seem like a movie out of time, and or at the very least.
Because, I mean, the Subaru is a more modern Subaru body
style. Yeah,
it's
a 2000-something Subaru, and there's the other car's a Kia.
Yeah, because that's the only reason I was like, is this take place in, like, the 90s or something?
No, and I think it's supposed to also help represent that out of timeliness. I think it's supposed to help represent that rural quality.
It's like Napoleon Dynamite, where you cannot figure out what year it's supposed to be.
Could be 1978, could be 1998,
could be 2008.
Right. When the movie starts and we see Billings, I was like, is this me walking to elementary school? So I'm like, Jesus, this looks like fucking the western suburbs.
I've seen that in Illinois, though. Like, when I went down to Carbondale, Illinois, it felt like, because I grew up in DeKalb, which is the home of Northern Illinois University. And when I went to Carbondale as an adult, which is home of Southern Illinois University, it looked like DeKalb from when I was a kid, which was so weird to me.
Well, they've talked about that. And when I say they, I mean, like, people who've studied this, I can't remember what the terminology is for it, but the idea, it's a certain type of architecture, but the idea that you can show a picture of a strip mall with a few things in it and just put it on the internet and be like, recognize this, and people from literally every single state will be like, yep, that's got to be such and such. Looks just like it.
Right.
Because it's so redundant in the U.S.
Well, and it's and the architectural shifts happen in metropolitan areas, and then they trickle down in out to the more rural areas. Mm-hmm. So it takes longer, and so I think that's part of that too.
The rural area is the Australia of America,
the outback.
No, just Australia. They get everything like years later.
That's fair. Sorry, Australia. Not to knock you.
I mean, you did give us Mel Gibson, so thanks a lot.
Yeah, but they also gave us Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman.
And Russell Crowe.
That one goes up and
down. That's a mixed bag.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. Sometimes, but, yes. Sometimes.
Fine, you gave us Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Thank you.
There you go.
That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
By making me feel depressed. It makes me feel good.
So yeah, that's Nebraska.
Hold on.
Oh, is there more?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously we have our final thoughts and stuff like that, but...
Ah. The ride through town is literally a victory lap, as he now can feel respected, envied, instead of victimized by this redneck mountain town. He gets to feel like he is somebody, because if you're not somebody, you're nobody.
Okay.
And that's Nebraska.
And that's Nebraska.
All right. Favorite weirdo.
Oh, yeah. Mine.
I think we might all have the same favorite weirdo this time.
Well, somebody quoted him earlier.
Oh.
Bernie Bowen, the Woody looking great guy.
That's your favorite weirdo?
Because he looked fucking weird and has a weird voice, but is like so pleasant.
Okay.
Like he's the one, like him, like the newspaper lady. I'm like, you know, these are like the two only sincere people in Hawthorne, it seems.
They are.
There's probably a lot more sincere people at Hawthorne. They're at church. They're not at the bar.
Or they're busy wondering why their air compressor's out of place.
Just like I'm sure that there are, aside from the two cousins, also people under the age of 65 in this town somewhere.
Maybe.
You just never see them.
If they're smart, I mean,
that's a real thing, though. Like with these, a lot of these rural towns have aged out. Like have died because people
whatever
left.
The industry was, right. Died, yeah.
And the only people left are the older people. And once they die out, the town is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite weirdo?
I mean, I don't know. I guess my favorite Woody.
Your favorite Woody.
Woody.
It's just Woody.
Okay, my favorite weirdo is Kate.
Fair enough.
I don't feel like Kate's weird enough.
She's not.
She
that
flashed
weird.
A gravestone, David.
Right. Yeah, good for her.
No, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying she's definitely weird.
Other than Bernie, I wouldn't want to hang out with Bernie Bowen. I would hang out with Kate.
Kate would be.
She
a blast.
Seems like a blast. Yeah. Unless I did something dumb, and then I'll never hear the end.
Then kick your ass.
Then she'd say something, and you'd still be mad about it 2 weeks later, and she wouldn't even know
she'd
she said
like,
it.
She'd be like, "You don't know. You have a vagina face."
knew if I brought that up and come back.
Well,
yeah, of course. Final thoughts on the movie? I mean, you kind of gave
a little
bit of it.
We've been sprinkling thoughts throughout.
I don't know. I still, having rewatched it now, the first time I saw it was in theaters in 2013. I still really like it. I love the dryness of the madness in this film. I think the character work is fantastic. I think the writing's great. It's just, and what I really appreciated this time was the simpleness of the movie. in the sense that, you know, a lot of times when we talk about great movies, we talk about things that are just like thought over and poured over and this grand thing happening. Even Parasite, which is great. I loved Parasite.
No, Parasite's got a lot of layers, and this has layers, but in a very understated way.
It's got a much more of a simple, like, we're just going to do this movie. And and I think sometimes we forget about this kind of filmmaking, where it can be something simple and
there's no real high stakes. It's just sort of life happening.
Yeah.
Well, when the source material is this solid, you don't have to make up for it with tricks.
No.
And even the black and white choice is a choice just meant. I have to assume that it's just like, this is what this is.
Right.
Like we're not gonna try and, like, we're gonna purposely take color away just so that that's one less thing for you to even focus on.
Right.
Like that, and the fact that this movie could very much exist in black and white times.
Oh, sure. But I love the fact that the movie's not, like, trying to change the world. It's not, like we're going to say this thing. It's literally just, like, we want you to look and see what this part of life is.
It's a very personal story.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is personal to the writer, but I'm sure there's elements.
Sure,
but
it feels that way.
But there's relatable bit. You don't have to have lived in a small town to understand this, at least the family stuff.
But it definitely resonates to that.
Yeah, to get the small town feel of how a small town works. And however, since everybody knows everybody, and when everybody knows that you're a pushover, what that does to a person. But it's a family story. It's very much in line with movies that came out almost a decade prior to it. Cause it, like that Fox Searchlight.
Yeah.
Sort of the Sunshine Pictures with Alan Arkin, for instance.
So. Yeah. I mean, it definitely feels like it was probably the tail end that indie renaissance.
But muted.
Sure.
The John Krasinski one with Maya Rudolph.
Oh.
Away We Go.
Yeah.
Whereas, you got a couple quirky people in there, but for the most part, this is a story. This is a fairly simple story about relationships.
Yep.
And it's not, I mean, to call it a road trip film is really kind of silly because they literally drive from one place to another. And you don't get, like, there's not a ton of road.
It's mostly taking place in one place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amanda, final thoughts on it?
I mean, I liked it. It was quiet. It was simple. It's one of those movies that I enjoyed, but I wouldn't necessarily, you know, buy the DVD and pop it in. I probably won't ever watch it again. But it, as someone who grew up in a small town surrounded by even tinier towns, like population 250, it felt like home to me. Like, it was very relatable for me just watching it. I was like, oh, this is all very familiar.
Was there one restaurant, Monocles?
Tuscola had more than one restaurant. One of them was Monocles. Sidoris had the Sidoris Pub, and somebody else bought the Sidoris Pub, and everyone was infuriated that burgers were $5 and beer was now $3.
Oh my God.
Like, that was just, that was anarchy.
The fuck year is this?
About 2013, honestly.
Jesus.
I was like, you live near a university town where stuff is more expensive. Like, it's not like this is city prices.
Right.
But yeah, so like I've experienced that whole thing.
Calling me at 8:00.
You won $1 million, Dave.
There you go.
Should I answer it?
No,
because then you have to drive to Lincoln, Nebraska, and pee on the side of the road.
There's not much in Lincoln, Nebraska. I've been through there several times.
I have too. I had to fly into Nebraska to go to a wedding in Iowa.
Oh, wasn't there an episode of Unfucking Relatable about that wedding?
Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
All right,
but it's like. We got there at night, and so yeah, maybe that's why the airport was empty. I just prefer to think of it as no one's there.
I mean, maybe not. It's Nebraska.
But literally, no lights driving anywhere. Literally driving in a cornfield. Fucking creepy as shit. When all you have are headlights.
Like, yeah. It's
scarier when you're driving through there during tornado season.
I would imagine so.
I've driven through some scary-ass storms in Nebraska and Oklahoma.
Although, admittedly, if I saw one of those storms driving through Nebraska, I'd change course.
It was really cool seeing all of the lightning everywhere until I'm like, but there's nowhere to pull over. Yeah, don't like it. Not a fan. Tornado here in the Midwest at my house. I will stand on the front porch and watch it. In my car in the middle of nowhere. Terrifying. So those are my final thoughts.
Okay.
About tornadoes.
Tornadoes.
And Nebraska.
Nebraska.
All right. So I think it's time to rate.
I am going to go 7.25 candy corn.
Candy corn.
Because there's literally nothing but corn in Nebraska.
Wow.
And wheat. And presumably Bernie is there too. I bet that guy actually is in that town.
Yeah, probably.
He's the town greeter. They don't have a Walmart. They just have a town greeter.
Oh.
I'm going to go 8 Werther's Original.
Ooh, nice. Ah, damn it. I was going to go with Werther's Original.
Find another old person candy. Yeah. Rocks, stars, or something.
I'm going to go.
Just say rock.
I'm going to go 8.7.
Oh.
8.7. I almost want rock candy too, damn it. I'm going to go with those cinnamon, the hard cinnamon candies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those are gross.
You could have gone with butterscotch too.
Yeah, but I think the cinnamon ones make sense because there's a little bit of pepperiness, just like Kate and
Woody's. Oh yeah, I was gonna say Kate's so spicy.
Spicy. Why is she spicy?
Spicy.
Why is she spicy?
So yeah, I was a little. I'm not gonna lie. I was a little worried that one of you would hate the movie.
You know, it starts slow.
It does.
I was a little bored at first.
I was worried.
Yeah.
I honestly, as I got about 20 minutes, and I'm like, oh no.
I also
There's
started
still another hour and a half
really late last night because I kind of forgot I was supposed to watch it, and then couldn't find anywhere to play it, so I started
in a bad
mood.
I was
annoyed when I started it.
You know what? I kind of was too. It was, fuck, how am I supposed to take notes? I got to watch this on my laptop, so I got to fucking.
I had to watch it on my laptop too.
Switching back and forth between this and my document, so I have to pause the movie. And that's why after a certain amount of time, I just stopped.
Fair enough.
I just would have used paper.
That's a thing.
I can't.
They still use paper in Nebraska.
I have paper. I weirdly don't have any writing implements in my house.
That's fucking
weird.
That
is strange.
I have lots of
writing
implements.
I must. I just don't know where they
You've
are.
You've got to.
I'm sure I threw them in a box.
So that's Nebraska.
Yep.
I'm actually surprised that I was the lowest rate because I certainly didn't dislike it. I think there's a lot of great elements to it.
Sure.
I guess part of it is that it's not the most the premise of the fucking letter is the most original thing of the film.
Sure.
Because a lot of it, I sort of do feel like I've seen similar things before. The performances are great.
Yeah.
I
mean, you haven't seen Sideways. I would say this is probably my second favorite. Just having rewatched it now, it's probably my second favorite Payne movie.
I don't want to watch Thomas Hayden Church.
Oh, he's so good at being a piece of shit in Sideways.
He really is.
And he's a piece of shit actor, so that's fine.
It works.
I don't know. Look.
I mean,
I don't know him as a person. He might be a great.
You were pleasantly surprised by Will Forte in this movie
because there is something to be said for casting someone for the right role,
right? And just saying, Thomas Hayden Church is perfect for the role.
And hold on, yeah. I mean, there were plenty of they wanted bigger names for this movie.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I do want to hear what the other names are because it's this is definitely at because he had just gotten done with Sideways and The Descendants, which he did. Clooney did The Descendants, so like I'm sure this movie was kind of a hot commodity for some actors.
even though writer Bob Nelson, no one knew who the hell he was.
Yeah.
But to be fair, the script was very well regarded. They actually made this on $13.5 million, which...
That sounds about right.
Where's that money going?
Probably just location stuff.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Where do I see the casting? So Paramount wanted... They demanded a big star, so they were... So they had a short list of Gene Hackman, Robert De Niro, Robert Duvall, Jack Nicholson, and Robert Forster.
I love De Niro and
can
Nicholson,
we just stop
they
for,
would, they
can
would
we just
they
stop,
be terrible.
Can we stop for a moment just to point out, they said big star and then put
Robert Forster. I could see Hackman in a different way in this, and I could even see Duvall doing this and being decent in
it. I think that those would be the closest.
But definitely not De Niro or Nicholson.
There's
those
too
would be
much,
terrible. And I love both of them.
Their intensity is not smoldering. Their intensity is outward, whereas Bruce Dern's is turned inward.
I would say Duvall would be the closest.
Duvall, so that, I think that would have been good. Hackman and Nicholson retired.
Yeah.
So
And
Duvall and De Niro declined.
That's fair. I mean, it's not
no mention of what happened to Robert Forster. Now, Will Forte's role was other candidates: Paul Rudd.
Okay.
That would have been awful. Casey Affleck. I can kind of see that.
I could see Casey Affleck. I could see Paul Rudd.
And then there's Matthew Modine, who spoke publicly of being considered, but as I can imagine, no one else will corroborate that.
Yeah, no, no way.
However, one, weirdly, we sort of talked about what a project of this gentleman, but Bryan Cranston read for the role.
Of Will Forte's character?
Yeah.
I could see Cranston being in this movie, but I don't know what
role
he would fit.
I don't see
maybe
it there.
Maybe the other brother. Maybe Odenkirk's role.
Step aside, Saul. I got this.
I mean, but I could see him in that role, maybe. But not in the league. No,
there. I guess I could see it, but... Because technically, early Walter White is very meek.
Yeah, but he's there's too much sharpness in him, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even Malcolm in the Middle, Cranston is still a little too sharp.
Like you see those wheels turning?
Yeah.
Whereas Will Forte just looks blank.
Yeah, exactly. Which was perfect for this. So I think the casting got it right.
I think what Nick is saying is that Will Forte is an empty-headed buffoon.
Perfect for playing it straight around fucking weirdos. It's great.
Phil Hartman should have been then.
Oh, God. Phil Hartman. Well, he was long
dead. He was long dead.
Yeah. All right. So now it is the time for the next movie.
Ooh.
Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck. Amanda's going to pick a movie we've all seen.
No, so
it
I was
fresh in your mind.
I was scrolling last night through the list, and unless there is some oversight, there is a classic film that I believe it's Nick that has not seen it. It
Rainbow seems like Bright in the Star
Stealers.
It's
always me that you seem to pick on.
And for once, I'm going to go with a classic, but I'm not going to go with a childhood favorite.
Are there unicorns anywhere?
Is it Citizen Kane
or
something?
Or a dark fantasy.
Wait, is this a unicorn store?
I don't.
With Brie Larson?
I don't think there's any unicorns, but I've only seen the movie once, and it's been a while. So I want to go with Heathers.
Oh,
okay.
I love.
Okay.
I'm gonna go ahead and give it a 9.8.
I might not. I honestly, from what I remember of it,
I don't like it nearly as much as you do.
I have never been that interested in watching
it,
Heathers. So this will be the first one where I'm on like
Heathers is a template for every Mean Girl movie that has ever come out.
It is, but it also goes to a really dark place.
Yeah, a place that Jawbreaker
tried. It's much more Jawbreaker than Mean Girls. I don't know if you've ever seen Jawbreaker.
But it is
Have
about
you seen Mean Girls?
Yes, I've seen Mean Girls.
But it is very much an evil, or not evil, but just a Mean Girl clique.
Yeah, okay. You're not selling it to me very well.
I don't have to.
I have to watch it anyway. Yeah.
It's okay. It is very much within the realm of how we started this podcast, which is classic movies that everybody's seen, except somehow one of us hasn't fucking seen it. So,
I'm just going to say it now, though. Now that you're picking movies that I'm not super interested in, it makes me lean into the Kurosawa.
You've already picked plenty of movies I have not been interested in, both of you.
Name one that I did.
Well, you both... So one of you picked a Kubrick and one of you picked a Lynch.
Which was worse?
The Lynch.
Lies.
Neither one of them was particularly good.
Lies.
So yeah, next time we will be doing Heather's. If there is a movie that you think that we should watch, you can email us. You can look us up at what the fuck is the name of this podcast?
Films Like the First Time? Like
I almost said Memoriam Development.
Well, the email is memoriamdevelopment@gmail.com, and Facebook is Films Like the First Time.
Cool. Jesus. And
wait,
yeah.
We have a Facebook page?
We do.
We've had one.
Well, I'm not on Facebook.
Or you can just hit us up and tell us that I'm dumb and I should know what the titles of things are.
Like the show you're on?
Like the show I'm on. You
again,
can tell,
that bar
you
is can, so low.
You can tell Nick how pretentious he is and Dave that he talks too much.
I talk more in this episode, I think, I did in any of
You talk
other.
A lot.
You talk a lot.
I did not expect us to go at an hour 40 for this movie.
It's still not as long as the actual movie.
No, yeah, it's close. But thank you guys so much for listening. All the things Amanda said, please give us a rate and review on iTunes. Tell your mother, tell your father, tell your enemies, tell your friends, tell them all to listen to this podcast.
Tell your shitty cousins.
Because we want to have more than one download.
Yay! Woo!
But we'll see you next time for Heather's.
Development.